You on Reality Check Radio, it's Real Talk with Rodney Hyatt. Oh my goodness, it's Lisa Tamati. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Rodney. Long time no see.
I know. How did that happen?
Don't know. A decade or so has gone by. We used to catch up quite regularly, didn't
I
we? And
know. And then I came down and I sort of dropped out and had kids, and I got sick of people.
yeah. And here you are back helping people.
And here I am. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to do my bit, but you are such a inspirational person to everyone.
Oh, not about that.
You are. Let me go through it. Like, Lisa Tamati, you're going to feel tired and in awe of this lady. And the wonderful thing is that she is humble. She's got full humility. But what an achiever. She's world famous. You don't realize. She is world famous on longevity, health optimization, and resilience. I know her through her incredible achievements as an ultra endurance athlete. She's run across the Himalayas. She's run through deserts. She's been in Death Valley, crossed the Libyan desert against the law, being chased by the army, as I recall. You've done every crazy run out there.
A lot of them, a lot of them.
And
Retired from that.
how long did you do that for, Lisa?
Oh, 25 years of doing extreme ultra endurance and expeditions and things. Yeah, a long time, a very long time, a little bit too long, probably, for my body's liking.
Because
But
you'd go on runs that were just forever.
So. Ultra marathons are anything over 50K, but usually the ones that I was good at were, 200K, 100K, 150K, that type of thing. So really long stuff. And I think I met you when I was running through New Zealand, or yeah, I just run through New Zealand. So I ran through New Zealand, 2,250Ks in 42 days for charity. And then I was doing another thing when I think I met you down in Wellington. And but I've had lots of adventures, lots of failures, many times when I've not made it, and real highs and real lows, but that's what life's for, right? Is living life and having fun, having
You've
adventures.
written five books. Just stay out on your couch, everyone. You've written five books, I think. Top sellers, because just
A
such an
couple of
amazing story. You've got a
them.
health podcast, which is hugely popular, on longevity and looking after yourself and alternative therapies. You're a biotech entrepreneur. You've added that since I've known you.
Yeah, that's relatively new,
And
doing that.
you've got what is it? How do you say it? Hyperbaric.
Yeah, a hyperbaric oxygen therapy clinic. So
Wow.
up just a small one up here in New Plymouth, and yeah, I
And
can
you
tell you
sell
that story
a
as well.
immune, what do you call it, immune supporter?
So we've got a company, Avum Labs, and we've been working for the last 2 years with a world-class scientific team behind us to work on immunosenescence, which is the aging of the immune system, because that's at the base of all of the hallmarks of aging. If we look after our immune system, we can live longer and healthier, basically, Rodney. That's
I
the
haven't stopped. I haven't
goal.
stopped covering off this remarkable woman. You're a top speaker. People love you when you speak because it's just from the heart and it's so incredibly motivational.
Oh, thank
So
you.
you're on the speaking circuit. Oh, I should have added this in. You're a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, in the
And
past.
you have your own webpage, lisatamity.com. Well,
All
that's our
correct.
time up, just covering off what you've done, Lisa.
it's nothing. It just means I'm old, really. Had a lot of time to do stuff. It's basically it. When you're around
I'm
long enough.
amazed. You must, I mean, the interesting thing about that endurance running is every time you do it, you break the barrier of what every one of us thinks possible.
Yeah, as a sport, it is about pushing the limits, and that's the name of my podcast as well. And it's about finding out, just how far you can make yourself go and still come up the other side, and having the courage to take on massive challenges, which is a really good learning curve, like for life.
Yes, and when you go into those races, you yourself won't know how quite you're going to cope, right?
No, you do not. That's like huge unknowns. Even when you've been doing it for a long, long time and you've got lots of experience, say, you can still absolutely, fall short or get sick or something happens. Human biology is such that nobody quite knows how you're going to react
No,
when you're pushing the
no.
limits of
And
sleep
it wasn't that long
deprivation.
ago, what, 40 years, that it wasn't considered appropriate that women do long distance running, like I think over 10,000 meters. They certainly couldn't run the marathon.
No, that was like in 1968, the wonderful woman whose name just slips me at the moment, but she was the first one to run the Boston Marathon,
By
and
cheating, slipping in.
by slipping in under just her initials, you see.
Yeah.
And but they thought that a woman's uterus would fall out if they ran that far, like.
Have you still got yours?
Apparently, yes,
It's not
I
fallen out.
have. Didn't fall out.
But isn't that amazing?
Bizarre, isn't it? It's
Well, I
bizarre.
don't know. I mean, I love the concern for women and I love the care, and but what's extraordinary is that women went out there and proved experts wrong, and you've gone out there and just next level, hundreds of kilometers in a race.
But like I wasn't the first either. I mean, we've got a history in New Zealand of some incredible people, like Sandy Barwick, who was one of my role models for a long, long time. Do you remember Sandy? Like she,
Yes, of course.
yeah, well, Sandy Barwick was like me on steroids. Like she, well, she wasn't on steroids, but you know what I mean? She was
Yeah.
this like amazing woman, like just did it incredibly further, longer, harder than I ever did. So you had people like that before you, that sort of paved the way. And people don't sort of talk about Sandy much anymore, but she was an incredible athlete. So
I
that
think
sort
it's
of laid.
hard. I think it's hard for us, right? Because you can imagine running a 10,000 kilometer, 10,000 meters,
Meter, yeah.
and wow! And then you see them run it so fast. But running through, was it Death Canyon?
Yeah, or Death
Death
Valley,
Valley,
for
sorry.
example. Yeah, is one of the
Running through
ones.
Death Valley is inconceivable to us.
Yeah,
And
that's pretty
so,
next level.
yeah. And in this process, of course, this is where we're getting to. You must learn about your body and be so in tune with your body and what your body is up to and what it needs as you've pushed it to the end and beyond. And that's where you are
Exactly.
now, right? It's that understanding that you're bringing forward for us.
And the mind, the power of the mind to overcome the pain in the body, when the body's yelling at you to stop, and you're just in hell and you are, like sleep deprivation when you're running for, say, Death Valley was like 38 hours, or in the Himalayas, I did one where it was 53 hours. Not, where you're not able to sleep, and you just, or you're having like a half an hour break, and that's it, or whatever the case may be. But most of these races are non-stop races. Some of them are multi-day stage races where you have a finish at the end of the day, and then so there's different types of ultras, but the really tough ones are where they're non-stop, and so the clock is going. So you can have a break, but your competition's not resting, right? So you've got to keep moving, and you've got a time limit to get through in. And so sleep deprivation becomes a massive issue. And then you're dealing with your body just, periodically falling apart. And what usually happens is you'll have these massive swings up and down where you're feeling like, yeah, I've got this, I'm on fire, I'm going good. And then you crash and you're completely like just dying. And then you're back again and you think it's all over. And then it's just this roller coaster of a ride. And ultra marathoning is all about, if there's a saying in the world, if you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl, but just keep moving forward, and
Wow.
that is a real, that's something that I have taken away from the sport for daily life, for big challenges that I've faced, with my mum, which we can get into in a little bit, with health problems, when everyone's telling you it's all over, there's no way forward, there's nothing you can do. And when you're an ultra marathon runner, you're just like, well, I've heard that before. I'm not
Yes.
accepting that. They've been
Yes.
wrong before. They told me I couldn't run across Death Valley. They told me I couldn't run across the Sahara or through the Himalayas and above 5,000 meters or whatever the thing was that you did and you overcame. So when someone comes along and says, like my mum had a massive aneurysm 10 years ago that sort of helped me into this new world that I'm in. And it was like, she's never going to do anything. She's got massive brain damage. Put her into an institution. She's got a very short time to live, and she's nothing you can do. Well, here we are 10 years later, and she's not, she got back to full capacity and all of that sort of
No.
jazz. I mean, that those are the incredible, I think what I took from ultra marathon running was really meant to prepare me for the stuff that I've been through in the last 10 years with her, and then now the space that I'm working in, which is in the functional medicine and health optimization space. So just to give the
Shall we talk
listeners,
about your mum and what happened there and then lead into this? Because the personal story is amazing. Tell us about your mum.
So basically, this was a decade ago, right? She had a massive aneurysm. So this is a bleed in the brain and a stroke on top of it. So we had a medical misadventure from the get-go. So the ambulance driver had thought she was having a stroke because she'd collapsed at home, taken to the hospital. He told the doctor, I think she's having a stroke or something. He ignored it, left her there for 6 hours in incredible pain. And of course, we as a family, and I didn't have a medical background, I didn't know what to do, what to ask for. You sort of believe that the medical world will know what they're doing, and you
Particularly in an
just,
emergency.
you're like, you don't know what to do, right? And so she was left in this. When you have an aneurysm, it's the most incredible pain apparently that you can possibly ever. Your brain is swelling, and you've got blood throughout the brain, so it's apparently the worst thing you could possibly imagine. And I knew my mum was in trouble because I knew she wasn't a hypochondriac, and I knew she was in deep. And he just kept saying, "Oh, she's got a migraine. We'll give her some painkillers," And I accepted that, and I accepted it. And then after 4 hours, I'm like desperate. I'm like, "This is not right. There's something really not right, and nobody's listening to me." So I rang up a friend who was a paramedic who'd accrued for me in Death Valley and places, and she knew my mum really well. And I said, "Can you please come up here? You know the people, and you know mum, and I'm not getting anywhere." So she came up, took one look at her, and said, "Yep, she's having a neurological event of some sort." So she went to the doctor and said, "Get her a CT scan right now, in no uncertain terms," and she knew them, so she could talk to them, right? So after 6 hours, she was finally taken for a CT scan, and then it came back blood right throughout the brain, and then they got into action, right? So 6 hours, like the golden rule is to get them into surgery in an hour if you want them to survive. So 6 hours was not looking like she was going to survive, and we were up in New Plymouth, and we don't have a neurological unit up here, so they had to take her to Wellington. That took another 12 hours of waiting for the air ambulance. All this time, she could die at any moment, right? And them going
How
to
old was
us,
she at? How old was she then?
she was 74,
Okay.
and they were saying, "Look, she's probably not going to make it, but we're going to try. We're going to get her down." Eventually, had the surgery, and then I didn't know what I didn't know, but that had put me on high alert, right? That just because you're in the hospital, you think the doctors know everything, that you better watch out. You better be the one that's fighting for. What I want people to understand from this story too is that we have limited resources in our hospital system, very limited resources. So the doctors are always prioritizing where to put those resources. So if you have a loved one that's in trouble, you're in a competitive environment. It's just like a sporting environment. You better be fighting for those resources, and you better be advocating, and you better be, especially when you've got an older person, because they come further down the list. I'm just saying it exactly how it is, right? And not sugarcoating it. And so this, what happened to Hirsch? They did amazing. Surgeons did an operation. They started to take the blood off the brain. They didn't know whether she was going to live because for weeks, what happens when you have a brain injury is that, or especially with blood in the brain, is that there's an inflammatory cascade that starts to happen. So you might survive the initial event, but then the inflammation starts and the brain swelling starts, and this whole cascade of inflammation starts to happen in their body, and their body starts to mount an immune response and so on and so forth. And over this time is when you can actually have more problems. So it's not like, oh, you survived the initial event, you're fine. From then on, it's like, how bad is the damage going to be? Because every day, like, she was losing more of her brain as the swelling took place and so on and so forth, right? And so they didn't know for 3 weeks. She was in and out of coma. She was, really on the edge of not making it. They did another operation. They sealed off the bleed, a coiling operation, marvelous surgeons. But in this time, I'm studying, and I can't take much control because I'm in the ICU at this point with her. But I'm there 24/7. Some family member was there with her. And so we are watching her. And the doctors, of course, are busy, right? They've got 10 minutes, they've got to get to the next patient, they've got a million things going on in their brain. So when you sit and when you observe and you watch your loved one, and you pick up things that they often won't and can't because they're not there constantly, right? So I picked up a few things, even in the ICU, that were, hey, did you think about this? Hey, she's doing that, whatever the case is. After 3 weeks, she stabilized to a point where they knew she was going to survive, but she had massive, massive brain damage. And so they said to us, look, we'll take her back to New Plymouth, but she's not ever going to have any quality of life again. We'll do some rehabilitation, but we're not expecting anything, massive brain damage. So she was like a baby. She had no ability to even sit or find her mouth with food or anything like that, right? And in this time, I'm studying as much as, and I started to notice in her, I'd done a lot of racing at altitude and I knew the signs of altitude sickness, right? Because I had altitude sickness. And I was starting to notice these symptoms in her. And I'm like, I don't think she's getting enough oxygen. And I happened to have a friend who was a consultant, sleep apnea specialist, with sleep apnea when you stop breathing. And I said, hey, do you think she's got sleep apnea? And he said, could absolutely well be. So I went to the doctors and tried to get them to do a sleep apnea assessment, and they wouldn't do it. So I smuggled my friend into the hospital at 10 o'clock at night, and we hooked mum up to the machines, right? And he did a sleep apnea assessment, and it came back that she was severe sleep apnea, and she was chain stoke breathing, for God's sake. She was 70% oxygen, which is deadly low. Like, you're knocking off the brain cells that you have, you're knocking them off at that level, right? She was stopping breathing hundreds of times a night. So this was my first win, right? Because then we start putting a sleep apnea machine on her, which life-saving. These things are life-saving. And so she started to get a little bit of oxygen, and then she started to have tiny bits of improvement, just little wee tiny bits. But the hospital system were like, no, she's buggered, she's not going to do anything. And so I had this massive fight to get the resources to take her home, because I wanted to take her home and I wanted to look after her at home and rehabilitate her and have my family support behind me, right? And we had this awful, awful social worker in there who just was determined to get her out of his budget and into another rest home's budget, basically. So he was like, you're never going to cope with her at home. You're never going to. She's 24/7, two person round the clock care. There's no way. And so I had this massive battle with him to
And
try
your
to get
mum
her home.
couldn't talk
She
at this
couldn't
stage.
talk. She couldn't
What's
didn't
her
know who
name?
she was. Isabel.
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 Poor thing.
Yeah, so she was, and I thought if I can get her home in her surroundings, surrounded by her loved ones, she will know on some level that we love her, we care for her, we want her to come back, and that she would fight, right? And that we could rehabilitate her better than any other place could, because we were dedicated as a family to doing that. And this guy would not have it. And so yeah, there was big battles that went on anyway there. I took my brother with me one day, and he looks like the Rock. So we got what we want eventually. And we took her home. And after 3 months, we took her home. And I had been studying in this time everything I possibly could, but I'd come across something called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And in the States, this is used for such cases, for brain injuries, for massive brain injuries of all sorts. And I'm like, this is a thing that could possibly help her. Where the hell do I find hyperbaric? I couldn't find one, right? So then I found a commercial dive company of all places that had a hyperbaric chamber, because this is what they use for divers when they get the bends. And I asked these wonderful people if we could use it. And they said, yes, sign a legal waiver. We did it with our lawyers, et cetera. And we started to have treatments there. And this was like going into a factory, putting her on a forklift to stick her in this big, what looks like an
Wow.
LPG tanker. And because she's parrot like, she couldn't move, right? So, really difficult to get her in. But we did it, and we did it like session after session after session, because you need a lot of sessions with hyperbaric, especially with this sort of level of brain injury. After 33 sessions, she was starting to respond. Like, she didn't get up and walk, but she was starting to have a couple of words. There was this flicker of intelligence behind her eyes. She was starting to move her right side because she was paralyzed on the right side. And I knew that it was working. And then I lost access to the chamber, right? Because it had to be taken off on a contract. So I'm like, oh my God, like, this is starting to work. So then I mortgaged the house. I bought a hyperbaric chamber. I worked out how to do it all. I worked out how to get her in, which was really a difficult thing to do. And then I started putting through session after session. And as she started to slowly rehabilitate with some brain function, then I had more to work with. So then I studied things like functional neurology and vestibular systems, because she had no vestibular system. She was like, like a jellyfish. And I started to do diet, like keto diet. When you have a brain injury, you want to go low carb. You want to go good high fats of the right type. And you want ketones. You want to do this, all these supplements that I did. And basically, I devised an 8-hour plan a day that I worked with her in some way. Now, she had massive neural fatigue, so she could only focus for a few seconds at a time. So then I would swap up what I'm doing and change it, and constantly changing and moving her body when she couldn't move. Just doing everything I possibly could to give her a chance to come back, because you lose condition really, really fast as well. So I was trying to maintain her muscles and her body while I got her brain to, heal enough for her to actually take over and start doing this. So, long story short, I've written a book about this called Relentless, and it took me 2.5 years and hundreds of, thousands of hours of rehabilitating her brain, doing the hyperbaric, doing all of these things. And I got it back to full health again, like full power of attorney, full driver's license. You don't get your driver's
You're
license.
joking me.
No. She had her own car. She was driving around town. She was like back to full capacity, going to
That's
the gym.
impossible, Lisa.
I know it's impossible. She's an incredible story. And you know what? Not one of the doctors ever asked me, how the hell did you do it? Like, that was just, no one was interested. But in this journey, I started to realize some of the deficits in our system, and that there was more out there that people were not being told, right? So other people that were facing similar situations after strokes and things, or concussions, or accidents.
Your mum, just I'm still stumped a little bit. Your mum is driving around town in your car.
2.5 years after her aneurysm, back full. Like, the doctor was in tears when I took her to a GP to go for her medical to get her driver's license, right? Because she had to go through the whole, sit the driver's license, medical tests, all that her, cognitive capacity was there, that her reaction speed was there, all her balance was there, all of it. And he came out expecting to see a lady in a wheelchair being, pushed in, because he knew how bad she was. And he calls out, Isabel, please come in. She gets up and walks in. He was just like, I mean, he
Wow.
couldn't believe she was walking. And she says, yeah, and I'm here to get my driver's license. And then he was just like, he couldn't believe it, and
And
did all the tests and came back.
if you had followed the advice, she'd be gaga in the rest home.
Should have been long gone. Long, 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 long gone. Long gone. And that was round one, Rodney. Unfortunately, that was only round one.
What beautiful children she has.
Yeah, she's lucky. I mean, this is the deciding factor, right? The deciding factor is a support network, and my absolute freaking ultra marathon mindset of determination, never to give up. And for me, life is binary. You're either alive or you're dead, and if you're alive, fight. That's the way I'm wired, and I get flak for that. I get it every time when we're in the hospital with something, because there's been a lot of things over the years. It's like, sign this advanced care planning thing, to you're not worth saving, basically, is what they're saying. This is my personal opinion, and I don't like those things. I don't think Every time they've told me, whenever she's had anything, she's not coming back from this. Right up to last month when she had sepsis, she's not coming back from this. This is the end. This is the end. This is the end. Well, 10 years of this is the end. And we're still here, and she's sitting on the exercise cycle in the next room waiting for me to take her for a coffee and off to the gym, you know. So they're not always right. And when you have this attitude of, you know, sign this advanced care planning, we don't resuscitate you if you have an event, you know, or this stuff, you are putting the seed of, I'm not wanted here anymore. It's time for me to piss off out of this planet. And it's, you know, I'm not worth saving. Well, these are the people that have set up our society, excuse me. These are the people that have paid their taxes, been good citizens, brought up families. And yes, they're costing us a little bit more at the end of their lives. And that's why I work in the space now, in the longevity space, because I really want to change some of these things. And I'm very passionate about that.
Tell us about that.
So just to finish off mum's story, unfortunately, 4 years ago, she had half of her face dropped, you know, and I thought she was having another stroke. And it turned out, after 3 weeks of me battling to get an MRI, which they wouldn't give me, I eventually got it, that she had tumors in her brain. Half of her brain was covered in cancer. And I chased this amazing surgeon around the country until I got him on the phone and said, "Do you remember Isabel? You operated on here a few years ago." And he said, "Yes, I remember the lovely Isabel." And I said, "Well, she needs your help again. And we've got this tumors in her brain. And can you operate?" And he looked at it, said, "Yep, get it down here on Tuesday. We'll operate." Took the tumor out, and it came back a really aggressive B cell lymphoma, which is a type of cancer that was very aggressive. And then we were told there's nothing we can do. She's too old. There's no chemo that she'll survive. There's nothing that we could do. So once again, I went back to the drawing board, and I have a podcast called Pushing the Limits, where I get to interview the world's top doctors and scientists, right, that I've been doing for the last decade. And so I reached out to my network, and I said, you know, like, to different people in the cancer world, this is what's happening. And I got the best doctors on her team. I developed a protocol. We did the metabolic approach to cancer. We went full keto. We did advanced genetic testing. I worked out what chemo, what immunotherapies would work. And I went also the natural approach. So I did both, because we were given weeks to live. Usually I would go the natural approach first, but in this case, I had to chuck the bus at it because it was a very aggressive cancer. And long story short, I've now released a book called What Your Oncologist Isn't Telling You, and it's all about the metabolic approach to cancer and adjunct therapies. We did things like intravenous vitamin C and peptides and hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And yeah, I put a whole bunch of doctors on her team. So I act like the CEO of 15 doctor team, if you like. They don't know each other. They don't know they're part of a team, but they are. And I worked out protocols for her, and it was extensive, like extensive work. And she had to go on a full keto diet. You know, when you have cancer, you want to cut the carbs right down, because carbs
They
feed
feed it.
cancer. Rule number one. It gets a lot more nuanced than that, but we use off-label drugs to help block different pathways, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, 12 weeks later, did an MRI, no cancer in the brain. The tumors were gone. And we have been free now for 4 years, just coming up 4 years. And we have to keep getting MRIs because it's the only way we can tell. But this is, you know, so far so good. And she's had other things, like fallen over and broken her hip and had sepsis and had E. coli infections and had other, you know, gastrointestinal bleeding, and nearly died 100 times, but she's still here, still fighting, still loving life, still seeing her grandchildren grow up, you know, still with us. And this story is, you know, catapulted me into the world of functional medicine fully. So that's my thing now. So I work with people all around the world and help them with health optimization, functional medicine approach. So a very holistic approach. I run a hyperbaric oxygen therapy clinic, obviously, here, because I'm a big proponent of that. It's a cornerstone. But the longevity space, Rodney, is just exploding. Like, in America, the money that is being poured into the world of multi-omics, and multi-omics is a study of different things like proteomics and microbiomics and all these big words, right, that are all to do with understanding the body on a level that we never could before. And it allows us to personalize the treatments to this person's whole body and how they're presenting right now, epigenomics, genetics, all of that type of stuff. And the AI that's now coming, right, with the AI coming into it, we're collapsing the time that it's taking to do all this research. So I interviewed a Dr. David Furman recently from Stanford University, and he's done a project called the 1000 Immunomes Project, which was looking at the immune system and aging. And he said, I can do in my lunch break what used to take me years to do, because of
Wow.
AI. He's collapsed the whole research time to work out, like difficult, the folding of different proteins and things like that they can do now, the AI, because of this huge compute that AI brings to the table. They can test drugs much faster. They can do all of this. And so we're in an exciting, super exciting time of change. So in the future, picture a world where we can live in optimal health for 120, 150 years. We don't know where the limit is. Currently, it's around 120 years because of the telomere length that we have. And I've done a course with Dr. Bill Andrews, who's a telomere scientist, and they're the little shoe caps at the end of the chromosomes, and they get shorter. So that's our current limit. But he's working on ways on lengthening telomeres, and other people are working on all of these hallmarks of aging, these 12 hallmarks of aging. And we're starting to get to the point where we're going to be able to see disease much, much earlier, right? So you can, in America, and this is my other problem, is that we're like 30 years behind, right? 30 years behind in clinical as to what's happening there. We're teaching outdated stuff, we're doing outdated stuff. And so we're a little island at the end of the world with not a heck of a lot of resources, right? We don't have the
And
billions.
run as a state socialist
Amen.
ration system.
Amen. Yeah, no argument there. And our regulatory bodies are not set up for the change that is here and the change that is coming. So that means, like, for example, I've studied peptides. I know all about peptides. Peptides are a whole area of medicine that is huge in America, that is the most powerful things to be able to help people optimize their health. They are just starting to get it so that the doctors can prescribe it, but there's no doctors who know about it, and there's no doctors who are educated in it. So I have a group of doctors now that we have a get together every month. I bring in speakers from overseas that are teaching cutting edge things like peptides and like other things as well. What's actually happening now on the current research front, not what they
And
taught
that's on
you.
your podcast, Lisa.
No, this is a group of doctors that I also run, so that
Oh,
we
yeah.
have doctors and allied health professionals.
Yeah.
So trying to get us a group of really cutting edge people that want to learn what's actually happening now. And it's only a
Wow.
small, we've just started 6 months ago, a small group, and we've got, chiropractors, and we've even, got, all sorts of allied health people as well. And it's just about learning what's actually happening, because nobody can keep up, right? Like the amount of research coming out now is just, beyond any person. So for people listening out there that have a rare disease or a disease that you're told there's no answer for, like, well, here's a drug and that's the only thing that we can do, but it's only going to delay it, or something like that. Something like, Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or multiple sclerosis or cancers or any of these things, like, don't take that as being the gospel, because that is that person's knowledge. That is not what's out in the world right now. So if you're prepared to put in a lot of work, do the research, find the people at the cutting edge, take some risks, maybe go overseas if you have the capacity to do so, get some of the access to some of these things. Like, I couldn't take mum overseas, so I've had to do what I could do, within the bounds of New Zealand. And it's really frustrating. It's really frustrating getting things in here when MedSafe and people are, like, they don't even know about any of this stuff, but they just block everything. They block, it's a really difficult
Well, and they're
thing.
also the shills for Big Pharma, right?
100%, a hundred
And
percent.
Big Pharma's interest isn't us being well and healthy and living a
Hell
good
no.
life. They
Hell
want us
no.
taking pills every day.
And there is capture of our whole health system, of our
And
whole
it
health
should be
system.
called a sickness in the system.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is like I want to be in the prevention space. I want to be catching stuff early, right? If I look at someone's blood work and I see that their HbA1c, which is a marker of your blood sugars over the last 3 months or your fasting glucose and things, and I can see some markers that are starting to go awry, well, the doctors will go, well, you're not diabetic yet, and so we won't do anything. You know, like why not counsel that person about what to do, what's diet, what's the supplements that you can take, like berberine and chromium and things like that that can help you regulate your blood sugars, you know, just this basic stuff that we can do prior so that people don't get here. If we see someone's about to jump off a cliff, do we let them jump off a cliff and wait till the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, or do we try and stop them falling off the cliff? Logical.
You know, you're such a wonderful story, Lisa, because extremes are everything.
Well, you learn from the
And
extremes,
that's your
right?
middle name, right?
Yeah,
Extreme.
yeah.
And this idea of, oh, I'm getting old, and you're saying, no, we can live to 120,
Or
and of course,
beyond.
or beyond. And of course, if you get to 120, technology will be even further ahead.
Exactly.
So you're saying that we shouldn't accept old age as the end,
No.
and that we should look to, just like running through the Himalayas, Death Valley, you can achieve way beyond what you think and anyone believes, and certainly what the experts don't believe. We can find all of this out through you. You've got your wonderful web page, lisatamity.com,
Correct.
but you've got a lot of other resources too. Get a
Yeah.
pen if you're listening, because you can tell. Half an hour doesn't even scratch the surface of Lisa
Nah.
Tamati.
Well, just of all the stuff I'd like to say, you know, to
I
people.
know. What are your resources? Share with us so we can write it down.
Oh, thanks, Rodney. Yeah, I have a podcast, Pushing the Limits, so look that up on all podcast platforms. Where I share every week some brilliant doctor, scientist, researcher, or elite athlete, or someone, or you know their insights. And then I have a YouTube channel. I'd love people to go and subscribe on the YouTube channel. If you just look Lisa Tamati on the YouTube, you'll come up. We've got 750 videos up on there now, including all
Wow.
my documentaries that I did actually. They're all up on there. So if you're a runner and you want to watch ultra marathon documentaries, got plenty of those on there as well. But now it's all about health and longevity for most of the part. And then I have a book about mum's first story, that Relentless. It's called Relentless, How a Mother and Daughter Defied the Odds. And that's on my website. I have a company called Avum Labs. Avumlabs.co.nz, so that's AEVUM. And we've just released our first flagship product, which is Rejuvenate Pro, which is all about going after the immunosenescence, going after the aging of the immune system. If we can stop the aging of the immune system, repair your gut health and your cellular health. So we're attacking the hallmarks of aging through the lens of supporting your immune and your gut health, which are very closely related. And this is a powerful formulation that we've been working on for a number of you know, a couple of years now with a really top team. There's over 15 years worth of clinical data behind it. It's a pretty powerful thing. So if you want to support your immune system, which is things like your cancer surveillance, your gut health, you know, all of that is part of that. That's where we start. You know, that's a good place to start, a foundational area to start with on your health is looking after your immune system. And as we've been through over the last 5 years, we know that you can't just, you know, expect that you take some thing, some
No.
jab or something, and that's it. You know, like that's not going to cut it, right? We're going to
Well,
have.
my problem now, Lisa, is I'm the other way. I'm so distrustful
Yeah. Yes.
of
With good
doctors
reason. Well,
for
there's good
good reason.
ones. There's good ones and there's ones that have sold out, right?
Yeah.
And there's ones that just don't know that they've been through a, you know, a system that is captured by pharmaceutical industry. So, you know, they don't
Yeah.
know that they don't know. You don't know what you don't know. So
Are
there's
you
good
hopeful
people.
like me with RFK Jr.?
Absolutely. I was just in tears, ecstatic when I saw
I
that he
know.
was in charge. And like, why is he not in charge of our health as well, please? Because he's going to stop the war on hyperbaric, stop the war on peptides, stop the war on stem cells, clean up the toxins in the environment. Like, I'm just so ecstatic about him because hopefully that'll rub off on us as well a little bit.
Well, what COVID taught me, amongst many, many things, was that the entire health system is run by pharma. And so they have to destroy all alternative, just like they had to destroy ivermectin. They have to destroy all the alternatives. They can't allow them. And
Not good for business.
no, and they own the prestigious medical universities. I
They
never thought
do.
I'd believe this. I used to think this was a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
They own the professional doctors' associations. They own the media. And so there you are, achieving this extraordinary result, which in a rational, insane world, doctors would be there saying, "How did you do that? That's so
Yeah.
amazing. We want to learn."
They're not, like there's the functional medicine doctors, they are interested. They do want to know, right? But 99% are like, just ignore it onto the next person. They're all busy. They're all overworked. They're all, got all those excuses. But why are we not studying the outliers? Therein lies the magic, right? There's a lady, Kelly Turner, who's written a book called Radical Remission, and she's gone and studied, I think, 1,500 people now. Of who had terminal cancer and why they didn't die. That's what we need to be doing, right? We need to be
Yes.
studying the ones who didn't die when they were meant to die, or the ones that were meant to be written off like mum and why they haven't.
Oh, Lisa Tamati, will you come
Oh
back?
yeah, anytime, Rodney, anytime. I like
Oh,
catching
you're
up with old
gorgeous.
mates.
And can you give us my love and all our listeners' love to Isabel?
Yes, I will do. I will do.
And
She'll be.
she must be living the best life knowing the love her family have for her knows no limits.
Absolutely. She's a rock star. And she's actually the last thing I'll say, she's the key because she is the one who's willing to do all the doing. I do all the making and, doing all the potions and lotions and things like, that she needs. The exercise, the training. I'm a brutally hard trainer. People think I'm abusing my mother, I'm sure. But it's not, it's love. It's called tough love. And it's called, like, I have to move her, right? I have to. And I know what an athlete's capable of. And I treat her like my Olympic athlete. And people often think I'm hard on her, but no. And when people have energy input like that and they're expected to perform and they're expected to achieve, then they don't give up on life. When you're told to be comfortable and just sit back on your rocking chair, grandma, and die, they will. When we make them challenges, you're out there, you're at the gym, she's a role model, she has a huge Instagram following, she has, like all of these people that follow her story and love her to pieces because she has that attitude of fight and she never gives up. And that's the
Isabel.
key. That is the key.
She has an Instagram account.
Well, I have an Instagram account for her, obviously, but
And
people
what's it
love her
called?
story. So my one's just under Lisa Tarmody, but I share her journey on there,
Great.
right? And
Lisa.
people love it. They don't care about my
Oh,
posts, but they
I
love
love
her.
it. I love it. There you go. Send us a text that. Oh, I've forgotten the number, but everyone knows it because I've said it so many times. But you can email me inbox@realitycheck.radio. Check out lisatamity.com. What a woman. So lovely to have you here. We're going to have you back for sure.
Excellent, Rodney, and it's about time we caught up personally, I reckon.
Yeah.